the place that they love, this local, small, strange little state, is just being eroded by the forces of bigness and national consumer culture. And so they begin to take steps in defense of the place they love. They end up nonviolent fugitives from the law, and they have a series of adventures that conclude not only with what may be the only cross-country ski chase scene in American literature, but consuming an inordinate amount of Vermont's great product, the micro-brewed beer in which we lead the world in production.
Well, we'll do a web exclusive. You can check it out at democracynow.org about Radio Free Vermont, A Fable of Resistance. It's the first novel of our guest, the founder of 350.org, Bill McKibben, a proud Vermonter himself. And that does it for our broadcast. We have paid internships. You should check the applications at democracynow.org. Special thanks to Tarina Nadura, the Rafi Lerma interview.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is Positively Revolting.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space in Portland. Untold Stories is Know Your City's second annual benefit gala, and it raises essential funds to further Know Your City's programs of engaging everyday Oregonians in the history, culture, and civics of the region. This year's gala will bring together over 150 guests for an unforgettable evening, including hors d'oeuvres, drinks, dessert, performances from local talent, and a paddle raise. Again, that's the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue, Suite 200 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
A time when every second, every day,
yeah, I'll tell you when to put it.
How you cast your vote.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio this morning. And this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio here to you. We have a little funny sound in the background. Our engineer is going to get that sound fixed, I know. Today, I am your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. I'm not Ani or Lynn, but they'll be back to you next Friday, I believe. That should be the day that you will be expecting to hear them again. And I've had the pleasure of getting to guest host. So today, our guest is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio. You have no doubt, if you've tuned into KBOO before, heard of David. He is coming to Portland this week on Sunday at Clinton Street Theater at 7 p.m. He has a talk that he's giving as a fundraiser for KBOO, and we really appreciate that. But I want to give you a little background on David before you actually get to hear him. He is a wonderful and charming man, but that isn't his greatest asset. He's a journalist, an author, an activist. He really literally changed the way media was done back 30 years ago when he invented alternative radio as a means of getting out the important discussions going on in the world by people we're not hearing from. So he has had Howard Zinn, Angela Davis, Noam Chomsky, a few books of Noam Chomsky's that have been award-winning, Arundhati Roy, Vandana Shiva, many more. And we get to hear that here on KBOO at 9 a.m. on Tuesday mornings, every Tuesday morning. So you'll maybe turn in the middle and you'll hear someone speaking. That's going to be a guest of David Barsamian's or a tape of a lecture of David Barsamian's on alternative radio. I also wanted to let you know that he's won wonderful awards for this. His work is not just... common. It's not common in the media world at all. It's something to be praised. He's a winner of the Media Education Award from the Lannan Foundation. The Institute of Alternative Journalism named him one of the top 10 media heroes. He's the recipient of a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center. Those are just some of the accolades that we could lay at David Barsamian's feet. So I want to get him on the line right now. Welcome to KBOO, David.
Good morning, Linda. It's a pleasure to be on my absolute favorite radio station in the greater Portland area.
Well, you know, we're always so pleased to see you here. We're always so happy to have you in town. And I know that you travel around the country. You don't just travel over here. And so we're so grateful that we continue to get you and we have this wonderful relationship going.
Indeed, it's kind of an electronic umbilical cord. I'm sitting here in Boulder, Colorado, producing programs that are sent through the ether to KBOO and to listeners all throughout Oregon. So there's a very important symbiotic relationship that, we need the vehicle to broadcast the programs, and KBOO is that vehicle. It's a unique station. It's been around for, what, four decades now?
Yeah, we're our 50th year next year. We're working hard on our celebration for a 50th year. Yeah, there's a lot of people in the background doing work to make that a spectacular anniversary.
Well, I hope to participate in that.
Sure you will.
Community radio stations are not as common as you might think. You know, you're blessed there in Portland to have KBOO, but there are communities in the United States that you would think, well, automatically they must have something, you know, at least akin to KBOO, if not even better. But if you go to Chicago, if you go to Detroit, if you go to Philadelphia, to Baltimore, to Miami, to the Chapel Hill area, to Boston, liberal Boston, there is no community radio station. They have all the NPR affiliates, which churn out, you know, endless hours of Some Things Considered and Morning Edition. That's MOURING.
Yeah, you know, and in Seattle, they don't even have a radio station like this. They have a community radio station, but it's no longer really a leftist progressive station, and it doesn't have near the coverage. I have a sister who's politically active up in the Seattle area, and she's always amazed at how much we get out on the radio here at KBOO. I want to let people know what you're going to be talking about this weekend. I understand you're going to be talking about the broad and growing coalition of activists who have come into action after the Trump election.
Well, that certainly will be part of it. I mean, there's so much happening right now with Trump's trip to Asia, the possibility of a war, catastrophic war with North Korea, the ongoing assault, the brutal assault on our mother, Pachamama, the Earth, by the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and its administrator, Scott Pruitt, an agency that's charged with preserving the environment. And because of Pruitt and the other appointees, they're going full speed ahead in undoing lots of protections for clean air, clean water, and for the future, you know, reducing carbon emissions and the like.
Well, so and today we hear that in India, the air pollution is so toxic that people will be dying from it today. There's no question people will be dying from it. And it's considered, it's more polluted than the worst rating that's available to assign to pollution. In other words, it's never been measured higher than this anywhere, and the measurements haven't been planned to have it higher. And here in this country, where we had made some, you know, some significant and modest inroads against air pollution, I remember going to San Jose when 25 years ago, and when I first started going down, I didn't know they had hills just right there that you could see if there wasn't pollution in the way. And as the years went on, and I went back down there to visit in-laws, etc., that changed, and now you can go down there and you see those hills every given day. I mean, it'd be a rare time when you wouldn't be able to. So we saw some progress in fighting the kind of pollution that's so sickening to people, you know, anywhere they have to breathe it. And now they want to take that all away and poison us more.
It's a global issue. You mentioned India. I've spent some time in India. I haven't been there since 2011, since I'm banned from that country.
They banned you because they don't like your reporting, right? Because you tell the truth about Kashmir and about uprisings and movements going on in India.
Exactly, and that continues. But I was in touch with people in Delhi, where I used to live, and the schools are closed for a week. People are being told not to go out, you know, just hunker down in their, you know, apartments and houses and the like. So it's a very serious health hazard.
We had a bit of that this summer with the forest fires so near Portland. The temperatures would be up in the 90s, and the ash and smoke were so bad that people were having very serious effects, and we had the worst air in the country for a while until the fires down in Northern California did the same thing, and that just gave us a little taste of what it's like to not even after dark be able to really go out for a 15-minute walk without having it be against your health.
Clearly, we need to be active and engaged in protecting the future for our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. The legacy that we're leaving them now is not a very bright and hopeful one. But I'm convinced that if people organize, get together, act, get away from Facebook and into the face of politicians, that we can turn this crisis around and that we can have a decent future for the planet. I mean, this is it. This is where we are. This pale blue dot in the universe, as Carl Sagan called Earth, you know, a remarkable place where there is a life as we know it. And it's extraordinary that this particular edition of predatory capitalism is plundering and looting the Earth for short-term gain, not thinking at all about the long-term consequences of this kind of rapacious exploitation of resources. And I think this goes back really to the evisceration of democracy in this country. There was a wonderful Australian sociologist and a writer. His name was Alex Carey. He died about 30 years ago, actually. And he said the 20th century, and I could say this about the 21st century, the 20th century has been characterized by three developments of great political importance: the growth of democracy, the growth of corporate power, and the growth of corporate propaganda as a means of protecting corporate power against democracy. And that's what we see playing out in the halls of Congress, in the various state legislatures, as well as in the Oval Office, protecting corporate power against democracy. What does that mean? It means protecting the rich from the majority of the population, the 99%.
That's right. It's exactly what it's referring
to. That's out
there,
you know, that will not benefit from this proposed tax cut. You know, it's interesting. Because of my work with Chomsky, I'm so focused on language, and you know, reform is a very benign and actually a positive term. We're all for reform. prison reform, and when you hear tax reform, well, that's just great. You know, let's simplify the system so that, you know, as they say, anyone can do it on the back of a postcard. But in fact, we're witnessing one of the greatest transfers of wealth from the middle class to the upper class, and you know, again, a topic that's not often talked about.
But you know, this has been something in terms of this. It's been going on before this administration, and now it's going to be going on even greater. We've been cutting back the safety net for people in this country since way back in Clinton when the first welfare reform, and it keeps rolling in. So we're really, you know, here, and you've seen Portland change, and I'm sure the last time you were here, you saw how many more homeless we have on the streets. And that, you know, they keep telling us the economy is all right, but I see women and children and families on the streets. It's not just, you know, men who are roughing it. And they've been taking away our safety net steadily. I remember when Clinton took away welfare. My mother was a welfare administrator, county welfare administrator, as I grew up in many counties in Portland. And then she was near the top of the state welfare department. It was actually Children and Services Division. And, you know, at that time, they had done audit after audit after audit. Of course, they're required to do audits for their budget. And they found that fraud in welfare was 1.3%, and that the average person on welfare was a white woman with 1.5 children who was on it for just under a year. And yet we in America were made to believe that there were all these lazy people we need to throw off the dole. And now it's going to get even worse. But David, before you say anything about that, I want to tell people the phone number, because I want you to have, I know we've only got you for about a half hour, and I want you to have people in the audience to have a chance to interact with you. The phone number to call is 503-231-8187. Once again, I'll tell you that. It's 503-231-8187. If you wanted to ask David Barsamian a question or make a comment or talk about the upcoming event that's going to be this Sunday night at 7 p.m. at Clinton Theater, please call in and have your say, have something to say, and have a question to ask. We really like to hear from you. You know, we know that phoning in is another way of taking action, and when you do that, you become more committed to what you're talking about and what you're listening to, and that matters a lot in this day and age. So David, we were talking about how much more harm is being done under the Trump administration. And I think it's, you know, I did a show last week where I tried to just, you know, bring up some of the damage that's already been done and the actions that have already been taken, and I couldn't even get a third through the list. So we know that things are moving faster than ever before to damage and deconstruct progress that was made.
Indeed, an appointment after appointment,
yes.
Trump has shown his contempt for the rule of law and the supremacy of science. We are now in an anti-enlightenment era where science and scientists are being muzzled, that science results of science are being held in contempt. I mean, this is, you know, even by U.S. standards, which has a history of anti-intellectualism going back for decades. This is, I think, an extremely dangerous development. And
well, you know, and to have a president who's so clearly ignorant, and I don't mean that as like a general slur. I mean lacking in knowledge. He's clearly not very little knowledge of the current affairs and also history. And so, you know, and they think that they can change the world, and maybe they can, by just taking away phrases like climate. You can't use climate in
it's been removed from the EPA website
right now.
Any mention of climate change, for example. But actually, Trump is acutely attentive to his own class interests.
Yes.
So I would beg to differ a little bit with how you phrase your
his
comment.
Ignorance. He knows a lot about that.
Indeed. I mean, talking to the South Korean parliament a couple of days ago, you know, he injected the fact that he has a golf course in Bedminster, New Jersey. I mean, shameless
hucksterism. I know, hucksterism from the podium of the president. We do have some callers. Let me get them on the line with you, David. It's Richard. Hi, Richard.
Good morning. Good morning, David Barsamian.
Hi.
And thank you, Linda, for this great opportunity to talk to this great news person. My question is, how does one break into media to share the corporate warfare that's going on against people when you discover that not only is it everything that we have come to know it as, but it's also illegal what they're doing, the overt actions of the corporate agenda are actually unlawful. And so I have a pen, and I'd like to have you tell me what the steps are for people to bring that to the media's attention. Can you help me with that?
Well, I think, right there in Portland, you've got a wonderful resource in Paul Cienfuegos. He has an organization that he formed some years ago in Northern California. Are you familiar with Paul's work?
I've talked to Paul many times.
Yeah. But so strengthen what he's doing in a concrete way. Turn out on Sunday. Make KBOO the absolute, best radio station that it can possibly be, and get people to tune in and join and volunteer. I mean, that's
very... Well, and Richard, specifically someone like you who has a passion about getting information out to the public, come to KBOO. I'm not just saying that. I was a listener. I really like what I'm hearing here, and sometimes I didn't, and boy, I have this to say. And I came to a volunteer orientation, and then I moved into the newsroom, and they taught me how to write news stories, how to do interviews, how to do audio editing. You can walk out of KBOO with the skills to start your own radio station, basically. So I would strongly invite you to join us here at KBOO.
Well, can I just share, this is unheard of information, but I got a letter from the station manager banning me from KBOO for attempting to talk about the right to use the highway. And so I'm not free to just come and join KBOO.
All right. I didn't know there was a past. We do have certain set rules, and I don't know what was applied there, but we do have it. We do agree to participate.
No rule. I'm just banned. But here's the thing. My research has been going on for 22 plus years. I have file boxes of evidence of the criminal activity on the part of corporate entities colluding with government to violate people's constitutionally inscribed and statutorily inscribed right to use the highway, which means that we underwrite their coming and going, they're bringing cheap goods from far away to the store shelves where we pay again.
Richard, I'm going to I don't know enough about this topic, but I don't doubt what you're saying. But, I have very limited time this Friday morning, and there,
I know.
Sure there are
I just want to know how to get it to you. I have written to you. I have emailed you numerous times, and I'm just
Richard, Richard, can you
write to info@alternativeradio.org, info@alternativeradio.org, and I promise to respond. I get thousands of emails. I'm buried under a tsunami
information.
So I got to go.
All right. Thank you, Richard. And now we have on the line David, another David, David for David. Welcome to KBOO. Hi, are you there?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Good deal. Yeah, greetings from San Francisco.
Oh, well, welcome.
Rainy San Francisco, as a matter of fact.
Oh, like us here.
Good. Hey, what I was going to raise, and by the way, I'm just guessing that the previous caller, I'm wondering if it's kind of a colony economics that he's talking about. If I understand right, 22 years ago would have been early Clinton, and if I'm guessing right, it would have to do with the federal highways, like the interstate highways, are kind of a huge land grab. And they create a federal ownership of them, but the people can't use them in pedestrian kind of ways. And,
well, David, was there something else that you wanted to bring up today was your topic? Let's go for that one now.
Yeah, I'm looking at the idea of, and in fact, I think you, Linda, is it?
Yes.
You mentioned your mother was a welfare worker, and my dad was too, and at one point, would you say 1.3? My dad said it was never, ever over 2%, so that validates that.
The whole myth of welfare fraud.
Sure. Yeah, only under the worst conditions did it get into the high ones. And the idea that they basically spend two-thirds of the welfare budget for bureaucrats and investigations. And so if they have an investigation rate that only needs to be 1.3%, but they're spending, 65% on investigations and bureaucrats, hoops to jump through, they're hugely, my dad said they could have created a window. You just walk up, sign your name, they'll hand you some money, cash money. That would be far cheaper than what they're doing right now, because at the worst, like psychologically, only like 4% of the population have, they're too proud to go down to that window to ask for money. They'd starve under a bush before they...
And now under Trump, Dave, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. You were talking about the tax budget, and what will that do to the already crumbled safety net?
Well, it'll eviscerate it still further. It'll, all reports indicate, incidentally, that the vaunted middle class will wind up paying more taxes in the long run. So all of this hype, it was really
divide and conquer.
Instructive to see Paul Ryan and others talking about the $1,182. They kept going on and on about $1,182 in this tax bill for middle-class Americans. Even if that were true, and the jury is still out on that, that's not a huge amount of money. Not when you have trillion-dollar-plus student loan debt, when you have trillion-dollar-plus credit card debt. $1,182 is a drop in the proverbial bucket. It's not really going to make a dent for most families. Yet if you watched that appalling press conference, they were just falling over themselves, congratulating themselves on what they're doing for the middle class. But again, the representatives, many of them in Congress, are fulfilling their societal role, which is to serve the interests of the Fortune 500, of the Forbes 400, of the rich and the powerful who bankroll their election campaigns and re-election campaigns. I'm talking about Sheldon Adelson. I'm talking about Rebecca and Robert Mercer. I'm talking about Charles and David Koch and others of that ilk, the Schwartzman of the Blackstone hedge funds group. They have been pouring money into the political system. And Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, presciently said decades ago, we can have democracy in this country, or we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both. And indeed, we can't have both. Democracy is under attack. Are we as citizens going to sit back and watch while, this highway robbery, speaking of highways, highway robbery continues apace? Or are we going to say basta? Are we going to say enough, and echo the words of the wonderful African-American liberator Frederick Douglass? Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. So organizing, whether it's Code Pink, whether it's 350.org, whether it's any of these other national or local organizations or legal regional organizations, it's very critical at this moment not to be a bystander. We cannot be good Germans and pretend we don't know what's going on. And, my mother's ill. I've got to, spend time with her, and I've got to take care of my kids, and I just can't get involved. All of those things are, accurate, and people are, just working full-time, running full speed to stay where they are. But if you can become an active and engaged citizen, to roll back all of these losses that we are incurring as a society and as a planet. You know, Mother Nature is under attack. Would you stand by and watch your mother being assaulted? Of course not. You'd rise to her to defense, and that's what we are facing right now.
You know, they've made it against the law to save our lives environmentally. You see how many of these lawsuits are going on up there in North Dakota right now with the DAPL pipeline? I call up shows up there all the time and argue with them about, you know, they made it against the law to save your life. That somebody can fast-track a pipeline 1,100 miles in 6 months, that they can do all the paperwork for 1,100 miles of pipeline through all these counties and swamps and bridges and roads and all of this sort of stuff, and they can fast-track that in 6 months, but it's against the law for anybody in between to protest. And so it's against the law to save our lives. It's so bizarre. It's not taxation with representation, so it doesn't even get the basic focus of America, that these fat cats are just stealing everything we've got and we're not paying attention. Hey, one last thing. You were talking about the welfare. One of the things David probably knows about Choice Point and the Florida elections, that Choice Point was this private eye company that was hired to throw people off the voting lists. And Choice Point did such a crappy job that 94% of the people had to be put back on the list. They only had a 6% success rate, yet they were given, Bush gave them all 50 states plus the military. By the whole, according to Greg Pallas, Choice Point got the Homeland Security budget of the year right after 9/11, and started throwing people off of voting lists throughout the nation and the military. And they had that lousy success rate. So they've basically taken all of this data that Choice Point's got, they've sold it, and so it's like selling the souls of Americans, right? All of our reputations, all of our birth certificates, all of our Social Security, all of this sort of stuff, like the equivalent of a soul, is bought and sold by these con artists. And
yeah,
now,
I'm afraid I've got another interview coming up.
No, we're going to have to let...
I'm going to have to bail.
David, are you gone now, or can I say goodbye to you? Okay. I just wanted to say thank you so much. It's never enough time, is it? And we're going to get to see you this Sunday night at 7 p.m. at Clinton Street Theater. You know, there is a charge, $7 to $20. It's a sliding fee scale. We never turn down anyone who cannot afford to come or who needs to pay a lower amount. And we never turn down donations of more than that. But we want you to come out and hear David Barsamian and get a chance to ask questions at the end of that as well.
And get copies of my new book with Noam Chomsky, Global Discontents. I'll be signed. There'll be a book signing. Support community radio. KBOO deserves your support. Please turn out on Sunday. Thank you.
And David Barsamian, thank you so much. You deserve all of our support, too, for alternative radio. And thank you for being on air with me this morning.
You're very welcome, Linda.
All righty. Bye-bye, David. And now, we have about a half hour left. This is a call-in show. Anybody else who would like to weigh in on any of these issues that we've started talking about today, please do call. The number is 503-231-8187. I do want to hear from you. We're going to continue the discussion about, resistance and what we're doing after Trump. So I wanted to, I had a few points I wanted to bring up during this talk, which is that there are, there's all sorts of different protests and all sorts of different coalitions coming together here in Portland. We have a lot of those, like Portland Resistance and the organization, I think it's Portlanders Against Hate, that sprung up after the murders on the MAX train and came into action fighting the fascists who came into town. So I want to talk about, protest around the nation, and also the response of the government to that protest, and how, as they get harder on us, we're going to have to get more determined. So I believe we do have someone on the line. It's Ken Ten.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. This isn't exactly the topic you're on, which I agree 100% with, but I want to let you know that all of the negative comments about so-called welfare and welfare children and stuff like that, my mother had something like 38 children during the time she took care of those children. And three of them turned out to be brothers and sisters.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know...
she was a foster mother for the Children's Services Department?
Right. It wasn't all bad. It was pretty good. The counselors and workers I knew were really dedicated people. And so there was some good in that process.
Oh, absolutely. I think we need a safety net. I'm a firm believer, but of course I was raised at my mother's knee, and I would be there when the police would come on a early Sunday morning because somebody's children were found outside their house, and we had to scramble for a foster home real quick because this was more rural and smaller communities. But you know, I really, really believe we all deserve a helping hand, and I mean all of us. There's not one of us that haven't made mistakes and wrong choices in our life that may have taken us in a path that we thought was going to be good, but ended up leaving us, marginally able to survive and do well in this society. And I believe that all of society benefits when we take care of all of us.
Well, I agree, and I'll sign off because I know you're on a very important subject also. But I wanted to let you know that one of the children became my brother. He's a lieutenant in the Marine Corps, Green Beret, and so on. So that,
you grew up right in the middle of it. I've often wondered, I've talked to children who are, the biological children of foster parents, and sometimes they loved it and sometimes they hated it. A lot it had to do on where their parents were able to run the situation. It's not easy to have many children who aren't related in the same home. So congratulations to your mother for all of those years of great service to her community and to those kids.
Okay, well, thank you. like I say, get back to the important things that are happening today with
all right,
the
well,
and so on. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to make that comment.
Yes, thank you. I believe we have Irene on the line, and I want to do that number again. It's 503-231-8187. And Irene, you're here.
Hello.
Good morning.
I had a couple of things. Good morning. I just wanted to quickly put out a couple of things there for you and then let you respond offline if that's all right.
That's fine.
Okay. First of all, I am very glad, actually maybe three things, glad that David Barsamian is going to be in town and people can hear him in person. I'm glad that KBOO is doing that. And also I like the sliding scale thing that is done for people that don't have the money.
Yeah, it's meant for me. I didn't have anything to do with it, but I love sliding fee scales.
Yes. Well, I just want to say I appreciate that. I also appreciate the caller that brought up the banning at KBOO. That is something that is a little bit off topic, but I'm glad it was brought up because it's common, and it's so... it's hypocritic of KBOO to ban people for spitting what they believe in. And so I hope that KBOO, in its wisdom, will look at that policy about banning people they don't like what they say, do, whatever it is, and had a really good, strong look at their own self.
Well, Irene, I think they've just completed that a process of that took many months, like 6 months. It was spurred by some difficulties in that. What's the grievance process for volunteers? We've had some clear rules, but not clear grievance process for people who feel they've been wrongly, banned. Now, I'll tell you honestly, I was banned from being on air for 30 days earlier in my time with KBOO because I mistakenly, and it was a mistake, let the F word go through on some music I was using. Well, we could be charged $350,000 by the FCC when one of those words goes across and there's a complaint during the day. And so I was banned.
I totally understand.
Yeah,
that.
Let me finish the rest of this, though. Let me finish the other part. So, but there's now a process.
It's not done across the board, Linda. It depends on who you know at KBOO on how you're treated. I had a show there and one word went across and then, it wasn't 30 days for me. I was pretty much put on the outs of KBOO.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that, but I wanted to tell you about the new policy, Irene. There really is a
critical.
Irene,
the new process that you're talking about, I really appreciate it going that way. But where is the outreach to the people that have already been wronged?
Well, I think if there's anyone who was banned for a specific set of time and that time is gone, they should come back to KABU and talk with the volunteer coordinator and get themselves reset up. I didn't leave after that 30 days, but I know other people who have because they were just so hurt or angry. I do believe the new policy, it was worked on really it took a lot of work to try to make sure that the rights of volunteers are going to be clearly respected and taken into account. And there's a clear process of grievance for them, but also that the other volunteers, say there's a volunteer who is, has angry outbursts at other volunteers until other volunteers are wanting to leave or making complaints because they don't feel they can be there. Those kinds of things have to be thought through and worked through. So we have, I mean, when I say newly, it was just in the last 2 months that new work was done on that grievance process. And I do think it should really help in the future.
Do you know anything about outreach to the people that have already been wronged?
I don't know about that.
From KABU to make that right?
I don't know about any outreach to people from the past, but I can certainly bring it up, and we're hearing it here from you right now, so we're also going to bring it up that way. So, and I mean,
okay.
What I'm saying,
really,
if there's anybody
you hearing this, I know it's awkward, and
no, that's all right.
A
you
lot
get
of
to
integrity.
Bring
integrity. Thank
well,
you, Linda.
Well, thank you, Irene. You get to bring up these issues. We are very democratic here at KBOO, I believe, but we do have policies and process and mission statements and rules. We do have on the line now Terry. Terry, welcome to KBOO.
Oh, hi, Linda. I appreciate that last conversation.
Oh, good.
Anyway, I called. I live in an apartment complex, and I'm a senior citizen, meaning that I network with a lot of other liberal, active people. My problem is the marching. Whenever people get together and march downtown, it keeps folks like me from going downtown when we know the marchers are going to block up downtown so people can't get home and relieve their babysitters, feed their dogs. You know, we're into what you're marching for, but we're not into the fallout, because the fallout is what we have to live with. A lot of those kids down there don't. People have to go home and relieve who was sitting home with mom so they can get with their kids. And I just want to know, is there something you can offer so that those of us who want to participate, perhaps outdoors and not just on the webbage, but outdoors where there is no threat to people getting home or getting to work, taking care of their dogs, their pets, because that keeps it keeps a lot of people from participating.
Well, I think that's a really good point you're bringing up. I mean, from being a senior myself, I will say that my back was a real issue for several years, and I would go down and to the ones that I wanted to go down to, I'd make sure I got there for the rally and the speeches and that I could yell and cheer and hold my sign. And then when people marched, I had to stop, and that would be the end of it for me because I couldn't really do the marching part. I hear your complaint, and I don't mean it as a complaint in a bad way. I mean your concern about you want to get home, and you know you may not be able to get home. And one of the things I want to say is I'm not even a driver. Yeah, I've noticed.
I don't even drive.
Yeah, buses.
But my heart bleeds when I see those people blocked in their cars for our stuff.
Well, here, let me say this. Let me say this part of it, though. One of the things that I've noticed is that the police, they did it this last weekend. They actually, closed off a whole bridge that people were just going to be walking across the sidewalk on.
Okay.
But they chose to block the whole bridge. And I was down at one recently where they blocked three, the big women's march that was downtown?
Yes, I knew.
That huge women's march? Well, I wanted to get down to it, but I started just an hour before it was supposed to begin, and the police had blocked off four bridges over an hour before. So that means all that traffic was stopped over an hour before, and people weren't going to be marching over that bridge or any of those bridges. That wasn't the route.
So what happened?
I think to a large degree, the police play us in this city.
Right.
You know what I mean? They bring out the...
So I see you getting played.
Yeah, you know, so they... Yeah, exactly. exactly, you know. So they bring out their bicycle.
Whiteness too.
Yes.
You don't know what, you know, the other urban areas do to get a little bit more done. Y'all kind of sweet and innocent here, and yes, they are playing you.
Yeah, and they play us, and they try to, like, they try to separate off what's called the Antifa, the people who are wearing the bandanas.
Yeah, I know who they are, and I like them.
Well, you know, I feel the same way.
When
June 4th, I was down there, I went and stood with the Antifa people and just got to, you know, be around them and listen to them, and they're just very concerned and hardworking, you know, in terms of protest mm-hmm. people, and they always had, what I loved about them too, was they always brought you food and water mm-hmm. and medical supplies.
That's what I do for them. When I see them walking down the street, they got a little Antifa thing on, I walk up to them because I ride the bus. I say, you're in Antifa? And they look at me a little shawty, and you can see I'm African-American with wild hair. They say, yeah, and here's a 20. Keep it going. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, so I'm riding in the car, I see him, yay, Antifa. I give him a thumbs up. You know, I'm not for any destruction of property.
No.
But I am for push back.
Yes, and
you
not
know,
let
not
yourself be
wrong,
stopped.
Not for do right. And if I could talk to them individually, I'd tell them, don't tear up property now.
Yes.
Don't tear up property. Tear up ideologies, but not property.
Well, let's let some of the other callers weigh in on that. What about blocking traffic, and what can we do to make it appeal?
So that those of us who want to be out there in the numbers can be out there without tearing up people with the cars, because you should have heard the talk about those of us who are blocking
One of my favorite pharmacists, boy, wanted to give me a lecture about not being able to get home, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I like for the public to know we do care, because a lot of times they think, oh, they don't care about people getting home to feed their dogs and stuff. No, public, we do care, and I'm hoping that I'll hear something this morning or even next week. Don't let this topic stop until we have a solution to get people downtown without messing with the traffic or messing with people's stores and their businesses.
Okay, well, thank you. And I believe we have on the line. Thank you very much for calling in. And we have on the line David.
Hey.
Thanks for calling in,
good
David.
Morning. Yeah, you know, this conversation of protesting and blocking traffic and impeding people from getting to where they need to go, I mean, it's a legitimate concern. I totally understand. We all have busy lives in this, you know, late-term capitalist system. And I appreciate that the previous caller, you know, acknowledges and appreciates what Antifa does.
Mm-hmm.
They are amazing people. I've been marching in Portland for 3 years now. And I think people forget, I mean, if you look outside of our country, if something is going wrong with the government, hundreds of thousands of people get in the streets. People are more concerned with justice than their own personal issues. I think that's a problem in this country, is that we get so caught up in our own personal day-to-day that we can't even see past the systemic. And that, you know, when you're having arguments and discussions about protesting or even, you know, racism and sexism, people get so stuck in their personal that they can't see the systemic problem. And so, like, what I would say about, you know, we have to impede people's privileges of driving a vehicle to get them to look, to pay attention sometimes, you know?
Why we are downtown is it's where the people are, the concentrations of people. We want them to see it. We want to win them over. I'm not sure we're so good at winning them over, though. I think we have the right to block streets and march in streets. But, you know, there was a time when I had to get to after-school care for my son, or else, you know, they'd bring someone in from welfare to take your child away, because at 6 o'clock, that was it. They were closed. And if I couldn't have gotten there, that would be more than just a simple distress, you know, geez, I don't like having to sit here in my car. And so I understand the difficulty of that. I'm kind of interested if there's any creative, you know, I'm trying to think of, I don't feel like we've been very good in Portland, and I'm just saying broadly, largely at protests, of having good handouts that explain what this protest is about and why should they care. And I'm trying to think of creative ways that we could approach those cars that are all blocked up so that they would know we cared that they were unhappy, but we needed to be here so that they knew what we were about. I mean, I don't know, maybe we can do some interesting theater with handouts. You know, there might be ways that we can address this actually without taking away our right to be down there and draw their attention to a very real issue that's larger in society.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the problem, though, is that most people most of the people, especially when you look at the comment section, you know, when you're watching live feeds and stuff, they just don't have any comprehension of, like, the reality of what's going on. I mean,
well, that's why the flyers, that's why we need to tell them, here's some facts. Here, you need
right,
to.
Right, but a lot of those people don't even want to know.
Well, that's
you know
true.
What I mean? Like, especially, like, the Black Lives Matter protests. I've marched from North Portland all the way to City Hall, and I've, you know, witnessed a lot of this, and I just, those people, they don't want to know. They're racist, right? Like, Portland's pretty freaking racist, and when it comes to civil rights, people don't want to give up or give civil rights back to the people a lot of the times, and I've witnessed that, you know, on the streets. I've almost been ran over multiple times just for protesting.
Right, and there are people who want to be very aggressive about that, and I agree, racism is part of that, and depending on what the march is and who they think they're going after.
Yeah, I think that, like, yes, I agree. You know, we definitely need to come up with some flyers, some way to get across the point and acknowledge that we care about these people, not just exactly what we're protesting at the time. But
we need to be able to get
out from Soros. None of us.
No, and printing is printing is pretty expensive. I was looking at doing two-sided ones recently, and I was like, whoa, it was more money than I had in my budget left to use for that. I think what you're bringing up is obviously, to me, it's one of the key important things is how do we, go about our both street protests, but also direct actions, you know, popping up in the middle of, you know, town halls or Congress or, you know, those kinds of things. We're also in the, you know, we are glad that we have ACLUs and other legal organizations that are fighting our fight through the courts. Hunger strikers, there's people hunger striking in NorCorp probably right now today and definitely in Guantanamo. There's so many different ways that we're trying to, fight back against the oppression that's coming from the government. But so I think we need to, like, each one of those is going to need to be changed. They're coming up with worse tactics to get back at us.
Yeah, one of my major concerns as of right now is that we're at a point in society where we've completely broken down our ability to have discussion between sides. And, you know, sometimes many people would say that's a really bad thing. And I would say, well, sometimes you have to have this polarization because it just changed the form of oppression, right? Like, we have to actually be able to, sometimes some people need to win and some people need to lose. And right now, when we're dealing with these major systemic issues, the rich need to lose. You know what I mean? White yeah. people need to lose their privilege. That's
yes.
just the way it is.
And so men need to lose their ability to oppress women. We've got some huge battles going on right now. I think Black Lives Matter is probably the most important because that is the oligarchy is going to count on that they continue to, as they have here in Portland, continue to shoot black men who are unarmed and get away with it. And you know, there will be some of us here on what we call the left that will be satisfied with things far short of really changing that. And we need to not allow that to happen as we go forward in the system. I'm going to let you go right now. I really appreciate your calling. We have another caller on the line. It's Tim.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
I missed part of the show, so I might be repeating things. But as far as those people who don't want to get involved in the crowd, you know, don't want to be hindered by the burden there, and this could be organized into phone banks to host house meetings, to write letters, to do things that they would be comfortable with but would still contribute. And the other people could be in the streets. And
that's a really important thing to say. Those phone banks are super important. They can, you know, yeah, even door-to-door, some people are comfortable going door-to-door to talk to people about an issue and bring flyers with them without going down there in a mob of people or being downtown.
Exactly. I've done that myself for Acorn, for Idaho Fair Share, et cetera. But anyways, and as far as the inconvenience of it all, right, Yeah, okay. So some people don't get back to their doggies on time, or the babysitter's a little late, but whatever. These demonstrations are usually advertised well in advance. And if these people are into the issue, they should probably be aware of there's going to be a rally on such and such a day at such a place. So why would it be so inconvenient for them to shop someplace else or to take an alternative route and avoid all that and not be burdened, overburdened by freedom of speech?
Yes, well, okay.
And the whole purpose of demonstrations, or well, part of the purpose of it is to disrupt. That's what it's supposed to be for, because you're supposed to disrupt to bring attention to the issues that is far more important than getting home to your babysitter on time, right?
I think in general that's true. I think there are specifics that can be different. And I do agree. That's why we're down there. We're protesting to disrupt normal activity so that someone will, you know, so that we can get attention to a larger and more important cause that's not being looked at.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, thank you, Tim. I believe we have another caller on the line. It is Paul.
Good morning.
Paul. Good morning.
I work with the black Muslims, and one of the big issues with the black Muslims is the push we've been pushing to demand that the CDC do a comparison study of comparing unvaccinated children with vaccinated children, because black boy babies get autism four times as often as white boy babies, and boy babies get autism four times more often than girl babies do. And so the Black Muslims organization, I don't know if you've seen their paper, but they're always talking about the need to have a comparison study to find out if it's true that the vaccinations are causing the autism that is harming black boy babies at such a high rate. It's epidemic in the black community.
I hadn't realized that at all. I just didn't realize that autism was so strong in the black community. And I think that's because racism, again, I'm a pretty broad reader and I read a lot of stuff, so that I don't know about this, I think, means that it's not being covered appropriately.
Have you seen the television show Vaxxed TV, V-A-X-X-E-D? They have their own TV channel. And they recently interviewed Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Black Muslims on this. And so you can see it on YouTube. It repeats.
Okay.
And also on
Say
the
name of that again.
TV. Vaxxed, V-A-X-X-E-D TV.
Okay.
And there's an interview with Minister Louis Farrakhan talking about why this is going on in the black community. And it's part of the Black Lives Matters movement.
Yes.
We have to have Robert F. Kennedy, in fact, did a videotape that's on the program with Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Black Muslims, talking about there has to be a comparison study done by the CDC, which has never been done. It's the only drug in this country that's sold in this country that's never been scientifically evaluated. There needs to be a comparison study of unvaccinated kids, like the Amish, and vaccinated kids, because most of the people who end up having kids with autism were people that believed in vaccinations until their kid comes down with it, and then they wake up and they go, oh my God, there's never been a scientific study, a comparison study.
I agree. There absolutely should be. And as you well know, illnesses that are particular or more prevalent among black people are not studied at the same rate as others by any means. Certainly sickle cell is not. And so people with sickle cell can get to a hospital and have no one who has any knowledge there. So I think you're bringing up some really important points, Paul, and I really appreciate it. I'm going to move on to our next caller. We have Ron.
Hi.
Ron, you have just a minute and a half, Ron.
All right, really, really fast. I work with a student project called KnowWhatsInIt.org, and they've been focusing on...
Say the name again.
KnowWhatsInIt.org. That's
okay.
A student project.
Uh-huh.
And they've been focusing on what is in different products, but also they ask a question is, because recently in California, There's been oil companies are asking for permission to continue and actually increase depositing wastewater from their plants into aquifers that are not used. But that's freshwater aquifers that may be needed in the future with actually the diminishing factor of freshwater. And also the problem with the coal industry actually being allowed again to dump coal waste into their waterways. We're talking about bioaccumulation of toxins from every source, including being inoculated with various drugs. The problem is we have an entire system of consumer products and available government-controlled waterways and so forth that contain toxins. Can't we cut back? Where's the legislation that looks on human survival and cutting down the cost of health care by reducing disease?
Yes, well, thank you for that. I think we're going to leave that at there right now. So many things to talk about, so much on here. I want to make sure that you all know that David Barsamian will be here this Sunday night, November 12th, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. That's over on, I believe, 26th and Clinton Street Southeast. And the price for getting in, it's a fundraiser for KBOO. It's a sliding fee scale, so it's $7 to $20, whichever, you know, in there in that range you feel you can give. And also, nobody is ever turned away at the door at one of our events. If you don't have the money, you are welcome to come in anyway. We want to have you there. So that's David Barsamian this Sunday night. And thank you for tuning in to Positively Revolting today. And thank you to Ray Bodwell, our wonderful engineer who's been fielding all these calls. Do be sure and stay tuned for the next program coming up, which is Beloved Community at 9 a.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the second annual Portland Legends Showcase, Friday, November 10th, in Portland. The second annual Portland Legends Showcase, along with Don't Shoot Portland, are having a coat, hat, and gloves drive. Come support over 25 years of hip-hop culture and music organized by African-Americans and youth through performers and audience. Again, that's the second